you will increase your efficiency 20% if you learn to do the tough things first, the ones you don't want to do.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness.
If you're going to make it a consistent practice of working Saturdays just because you think you've got to work 80 hours a week to be successful, you're just flat out wrong.
To the downside of venture capital.
Well, I guarantee if you don't sweat the small things, the big things are going to become a mess.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
Don't want to wait until you jump off the cliff to grab a parachute.
Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO and today's guest host.
Well, good morning to all the audience and welcome to another episode of the Tough Things First podcast. I'm your host today, Guy Smith. And as always, we have Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO, Ray Zinn. How you doing today, Ray?
Well, hopefully better than you are back there with that ice storm. So, yeah, we're doing fine. We might get a little rain, but it looks like a decent day.
Well, there's an old joke that meteorologist is the Greek word for liar, and all of the all of the forecasts they made for ice here did not happen. So thank God for that. We don't need any down power lines. Hey, so what I wanted to talk about today is Silicon Valley tech investing. After your Micrel years, you got into a little bit of investing on your side. I've been on both sides of the pitch table in Silicon Valley, so I'm kind of intrigued by some of the commonalities, some of the traits, some of the things that we're seeing out there in the marketplace in terms of startups and investing. And so now that you've been actively on the other side of that table for a while, what are some of the common traits that you've noticed about companies that have been pitching to you for investment money but never got to their serious discussion phase? Where did they fall down in their approach to you?
Well, that's an interesting question, Guy, because I'm somewhat of a old school investor, meaning that I tend to like to see all the nuts and bolts in place in a company before I consider investing. So there are two kinds of companies that I see. One is someone who's just iterating something that's already been down out there and just wants to get their 2 cents worth in or get themselves involved. And the other is, a totally new market, something that's disruptive and they think that they've got the next most exclusive idea and it will, make us all a fortune. So those are the two kinds of companies I see. And in both cases, what I see is that they're more wannabes. In other words, they want your money, and they talk about their investment being sweat equity. In other words, they're just putting up their sweat equity and not putting any money into it themselves. I was talking to a fellow the other day, and I said, "Okay, how much money do you have in your company?" And he says, "Well, you mean investment?" And I says, "Well, how much do you have invested?" He says, "Well, I really can't do much because, other than, selling my house or mortgaging my house or refinancing my house, I really don't have the funds to do that." And I said, "Then why do you want to go into business?" He says, "Well, because I think I have this great idea." And I says, "Yes, but you're using other people's money to do it. So if you're not going to put yourself at risk, would you expect someone else?" And, "Oh, well, I'm putting up sweat equity. I'm working for, no money." And I said, for how long? How long has it been since you have been working with no money?" "Well, they kind of hem-haw around." And I said, "So the money you've raised so far, the money you're raising, you're using to produce a salary for yourself." "Well, yeah, I have to live." And that turns me off. So, and I've seen several, I watch Shark Tank, obviously, from time to time. And I've seen the same kind of thing that, when the sharks see that they have not really, put themselves at risk, other than saying, "Well, yeah, they're working part time or they're, willing to start in the future, putting in full time," it turns the sharks off and it turns me off too.
Well, and just to pitch your book for you on this account, there's a wonderful story in the book Tough Things First about your origin story. When you launched MyKrell, you went to banks, and banks never lend money to startups, but you were putting almost everything that you had on the line, your house, your cars, your investments, et cetera, yeah, et cetera, to get going. And that showed the bankers that you had real teeth in the game.
Well, it's a personal guarantee. So that's what a personal guarantee is that you take out a loan with the bank and or lending institution, and then you're willing to put up your assets to protect the bank in event of a default. And that's called a personal guarantee. And I certainly did that. The banks would never have loaned me the money had I not been willing to put up all my assets. Now, some of my partners weren't willing to do that, but the bank was relying on me primarily because of the strength of my net worth to back up the loan. So the one that's really at risk was me. Of course, I was the president and CEO anyway, but the bank absolutely demanded that I personally guarantee the loan.
Well, and given the way bankers view startups, I'm assuming that had to be the position, that they weren't going to even ponder a startup that didn't have the founder's financial backing in that, because it basically creates some sort of guarantee of effort, some sort of guarantee of commitment.
Well, in a bank case, Guy, you know, they don't have a financial, I mean, I shouldn't say an equity investment in the company. They just have that loan. And, they don't want to loan to a company that doesn't have the cash flow to make their monthly payments. For example, if you went out and bought a home or a car or some other expensive asset and took out a loan, they're going to use the home or the car as collateral for the loan. And then they're going to look at your ability to make these monthly payments to pay back that loan. And if you don't, then they'll foreclose on you, or they'll, you know, confiscate your car. So, you know, they're very specific about wanting you to have the ability to make those monthly payments. And so what I've seen with these startups is they don't have the cash flow, yet. And so they're unable to, you know, to immediately begin payments. So you say, okay, well, when can you start making payments? When are you going to be profitable? And of course, they hem-haw around about, well, you know, this is a new business and blah, blah. And then that just turns me off.
Well, and that segues nicely into my next question, because a little bit ago, you had mentioned new markets, companies that are developing for new or pretty nascent markets. Are you seeing a disconnect between the quality of the pitches or the business readiness of startups who are going into new markets? When I've talked to these people, almost all of them say that they're relying entirely on first mover advantage, and they think that's the only thing that they really need. So are their pitches lacking because they're depending way too much on that?
No, I don't think so. I think that it's the same no matter whether they're going into an existing market or whether it's he's called a nascent market, a first mover. It's not so much the newness of the market or the matureness of the market. It's more how that CEO or that team views their risk, as you would in the business. And what I want to make sure is that they're all in. In other words, and it's not one of those things that, oh, well, it's like me hiring them to run the company. And then if they just decide that they're tired of running the company, that they'll say, well, I'll just go and look for another job. You know, and then I'm stuck with the investment because I'm the one's got the money in it. I look for that. I look for how far they're in to the company. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. That does. I've got to imagine it's kind of tricky with these new market companies. When is it too early or when is it too late for an investor to sink money into a company that is attacking or, in fact, maybe even trying to create a whole new market?
Well, most of these startups that are into these new mover markets usually get angel funds. In other words, they'll go to parents or you know, family. Or to angels and raise a small amount of money, and then try to get the thing going. Once they get that going, that's that kind of that seed money, then they'll go start raising money in a serious way through venture funds or other means to really launch the company. So most of them die right before they actually get out there and start having to raise some serious money. They tend to fall apart right at the seed round.
Right. But from an investor standpoint, how do you know when the right time to jump in is? How do you know that you're not too early in the game? You're not investing before they have shown some real ability, but also do you know that you're too late to the game, that maybe you've missed the prime opportunity in somebody who's exploiting these new markets?
Well, those are two different questions. You know, when you know you're too early is when they're not ready. In other words, they don't have their product fully qualified or haven't proven it. And so they're just feeling their way along. In other words, they're just in the very early stages. When you know you're too late is they're floundering. They've gone for round A, round B, round C, almost the whole alphabet. And they've raised a tremendous amount of money, far more than they're ever going to be able to pay back. And so they're crying. This is their suicide round that, you know, they're trying to make sure this will be it. I mean, this is my last round. If I can just get this round, I know we can do it. We're right on the verge. We just got this customer all qualified and ready to go. So, you know, when they sound panicked, then you know that they've ran out of gas.
Okay. Speaking of running out of gas, this is kind of a leading question, but Silicon Valley venture capitalists, on average, have a tremendously horrible profitability record. Last time I looked into it, they were getting returns of like maybe 2 or 3% on the invested capital that they put forth. So what are the Silicon Valley venture capitalists getting so wrong?
Well, we should call it Silicon Valley roulette, because, you know, they do a lottery. They've raised lots of money, and most of them have raised lots of money and need to put that money to work. If they just put it in money market, of course, they're probably would do their investor just as well, because, you know, you can make probably 2 or 3% on money market. But, you know, the investors don't want you to let that money sit there in money market. So they have to go out and find these opportunities. And so it's a game of roulette. You know, it's gambling. And so it's this whole concept of venture capital is really just another form of gambling. They're just playing a lottery. And so they're looking for that one deal that will, you know, make their investors a fortune. And we know the record is that 9 out of 10 of these startups fail. And the reason they fail is they run out of money. And the reason they run out of money is because they can't get the profitability in any kind of a reasonable time frame. You know, look at some of these big companies like Uber and such as that. They're not making any money, and it's hard for them to sustain themselves except on cash flow. And so what happens is that they just fold up. Within the first 3 years, they're out of money, and the investors, you know, just don't see the recovery, and so they move on to the next lottery deal. So it's really a lottery thing. I mean, they're expecting to hit that 1 in 10 that's gonna make it for them. And in the meantime, of course, you know, they bet on the wrong horse and they spend a lot of money, and then they have less money to invest in those good deals that are out there. So, you know, the whole flawed concept of venture capital is the fact that it's, you know, it's a timing thing. You know, the partnership is usually a 5-year partnership. And so they have to get it moving, get out there, get the money invested within that, you know, the first year or first few months, because, you know, it's going to take, you know, 5 years or so for these companies to really, to make a name for themselves and become a viable company. So these VCs, they spend a lot of time just rushing out and jumping on these deals and then just hoping that their winning lottery ticket is going to pay off for their investors. And it usually doesn't.
And it usually doesn't. I mean, the way you describe it makes me think of a slot machine. They're just continually putting quarters exactly. in the machine and pulling the handle and hoping that one of those pulls of the handle is actually the big jackpot.
Exactly. It's exactly the game.
That's a terrible game to be in. You would figure that they would take a little bit more time to analyze trends, narrow down their portfolios, really focus on a few high probability companies instead of just continually pulling the lever.
Well, they say they do. I mean, they claim that they go through that vetting effort and they will tell you that they spend a lot of time and energy vetting these out. But if you ever watch Shark Tank, you know that every one of them on every one of the sharks is looking for the revenue that the potential, you know, the candidate has achieved, you know. So, you know, if you don't have any revenue, you know, the sharks just turn away. I mean, the sharks are sharks, you know. They're looking for good deals and they're looking for ownership in the neighborhood of 15% to 20%. Whereas in the case of the venture capitalists, they're looking at something north of 40, maybe even north of 50. That's an early round. That's very, 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 you know, seed round. And, you know, and when the company's just starting out and they're just getting their feet wet, they're more likely to fail. If I look at all the shark, programs that I've watched and I bet you less than a third of them the sharks even jump on. And when they do jump on it, they want a huge a percentage of the ownership of the company.
Right. And, you know, when you're putting up your own money and trying to get somebody boosted to that next level, you definitely want that equity position. But that's the game, I'm afraid, that they continually play in Silicon Valley, because so many of these startups are in the early phase, in the seed phase, maybe round A funding, that the VCs are trading off the same amount of cash for more equity, and that's their way of hedging their bets. That's their way of trying to find that bigger payoff in the end by having that larger equity stake.
Right. That's exactly what they're doing. Yeah.
Well, thanks, Ray. I appreciate those insights. For the audience, if you want more insights from the guy who's basically done it all in Silicon Valley, do get a copy of his book, Tough Things First. You can get it from Amazon. Absolutely entertaining, inspiring read from beginning to end. And you're going to walk away feeling smarter than you ever have before. And if you want to continue feeling smart, tune in for the next episode of the Tough Things First podcast, coming out every Wednesday.
Thanks, Guy. Look forward to the next one.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest-serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.